Hello and welcome back to the Mailwash of Kane. This is our third episode of 2017. We're going to be talking Formula One as well as our big IndyCar season preview. But first, we're going to talk supercars. I'm here with Josh, as always. After a pretty big weekend at Clipsal, on the face of it, it seemed like it was a strong weekend for Shane van Gisbergen, who took every qualifying session and every race, but in reality, it was a much closer story.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, it was a good start to the season for supercars for 2017. Obviously, van Gisbergen, you know, really doing almost a Marcus Ambrose-style performance at Clipsal, you know, doing a clean sweep of the weekend. However, for, you know, it was far from a perfect weekend from his standpoint because, like, he's still not entirely happy with his new car and specifically new chassis with how, you know, there's, like, some sort of vibrations that they still haven't gone on top of after 500Ks plus of racing and I think it was 60 kilometres of shakedown. So for them to be that far into the car's life cycle and still have quite a few niggles that are very uncharacteristic of 888 cars in the past, you know, it's certainly quite a concern. So there's that to keep in mind. Obviously, the other big talking point, Penske, with how strong they were, just not being able to convert in the race. However, they did get a good string of podiums on the weekend. Fabian Coulthard gained a podium in the first race, and then Scott McLaughlin, you know, just unfortunately and heartbreakingly falling under the heat and making a mistake, which gave van Gisbergen the Clipsal crown and relegated him to second on the Sunday. So a fantastic weekend for Penske, but as always, they have been very strong ever since the takeover slash buyout happened, which formed DJR Team Penske a couple of years ago, because first year they were at Clipsal, Marcus Ambrose got in the top 10 shootout, which is certainly no small feat. Last year they were pretty strong as well. I think they were front row. They got a car on the front row last year as well, and now this year they were at one stage 1-2 through the Sunday race, I believe. So they've always been strong at Clipsal, but this is their strongest Clipsal they've ever had. So there's the greatest hope and chance that Penske have ever since they joined Supercars for them to take it through into the following rounds at Simmons Plains.
Yeah, should be certainly lots of opportunities for Penske to build on that form. So yeah, the first race was pretty much dominated by Shane van Gisbergen. He got away well, and the Penskes weren't able to match him. I mean, Fabian Coulthard came close, but not close enough. Also, a disappointing race there for Scott McLaughlin, who was penalised for leaving under the safety car. So it was van Gisbergen who came on the top of the podium, followed by Coulthard. James Courtney putting in a good first weekend for the new HSV, or the rebranded HSV outfit. Chas Mostert, who was also quite strong over the weekend, and Cameron Waters was in there as well. And having a look at race two, that was also a similar story. If I just get up race two. There we are. Yes, Shane van Gisbergen coming in first. Scott McLaughlin, though, who led for most of the race, just cracking in the final few laps under pressure. And then we have Chas Mostert, who's now on the podium. Courtney in there as well. Coulthard. The big surprise, I think, for everybody is just how bad Wincup was over the weekend. He really was struggling with the setup, and he wasn't getting in the second shootout. He accidentally went over the curbs and didn't set a time at all. So it was a disappointing weekend for him, and not the way he wanted, effectively, his championship. Well, his attempt to get back his first championship in a couple of years to go.
Yeah, for sure, and like it's even worse when you go next door to Team Vortex with the third 888 car with Lance, you know, struggling all weekend. Like he was down in 20th at times. So, yeah, just it's a very big variance right now in inconsistency for 888. Yeah, just like as I mentioned just briefly, Van Gisbergen with the chassis niggles and like. I think they'll utilize the Grand Prix very much to just try and figure out what exactly those niggles are. Red Bull, like, they weren't, like, you know, 1-2 dominating, cleaning clean sweep. They're not like going to do a Mercedes of the last few years in Formula One, like we've seen. Like they're pretty they're pretty grounded compared to the rest of the field. Like they're definitely, certainly, if Penske keep their form up, that is, they're definitely within Penske's grasp. So yeah, like I mean, it basically previews a very unpredictable year ahead. And like if Red Bull don't get it on top of Van Giersbergen's niggles and Wincup's setup issues, then they could have, one big weekend where they're just absolutely nowhere and just can't seem to find the right setup. So, and that could mean they drop, as much as like 150 to 200 points compared to their rivals at Penske. So this championship is certainly, even though, I know this is a bit of a cliche with the only one event. One championship event of about 12 to 13 to go, but this is still anyone's championship. Like I mean, and then you've got the dark horse as well, like a brand new, much better Cam Waters, really displaying himself at Clipsal. Like last year was a disappointment. This year is what we were, well, not expecting, but this is a little bit higher than that. And Chaz Mostert, more much more consistency from him. Winterbottom, still not that fantastic. And then also Jason Bright just not there. So there is some promise from Cam Waters and Chaz Mostert. And then again the other podium finishing team of the weekend, Mobil 1 HSV Racing, they had a good weekend for themselves. Just to get, I think it was important for them just to get that first weekend out of the way without any big dramas. And they've done that pretty well. However, the old characteristics of the team, being fantastic at street circuits and being a little lackluster throughout the rest of the sprint round, which make up most of the championship, is more than likely to happen once again this year.
And it's interesting as well, you talk about HSV and Walkinshaw. Yeah, it was a good weekend, but you have to remember this is the first time they haven't come away with a win in quite some time. I think it's the first time since James Courtney joined that team all those years ago. So yeah, it is anyone's championship at the moment. And the important thing to remember is the fact that if Red Bull slip up, there is now somebody waiting behind them always, assuming Penske keep their form up, which is likely at this point to go after them. Having a look through as well, it was a solid weekend for Rick Kelly in the Nissan. He managed to get fifth place, and was looking fairly pacey at that point of the race. In race one, he slid a bit out of the. It was Todd Kelly who only was able to manage ninth for the Nissans. A baptism of fire for Simona Di Silvestro had a tough first race. She was struggling with that turn one, which is, of course, is very difficult, always whacking the tie bundles. And then later she got punted out by James Courtney in what was a very unfortunate incident for them as well. Also, a mixed feelings of Techno as well, who had that incident crashing out. And also a very tough introduction for Alex Rullo, the young 16-year-old rookie who was pretty much forced out of the car because apparently, according to the team radio, he was starting to lose it in there, and that's the last place you want to have something like that happen.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I mean, like the main thing for Alex Rullo is he kept his car clean. Like, I mean, I don't think he had, an incident with another driver at any point in the weekend, apart from getting it in the way a couple of times. So there's some positives there. I think, he just needs to get his fitness up, and I don't think, like his body is still like growing. Like, it certainly doesn't have the same capabilities. If you max a 16-year-old body compared to like maxing, a 24-year-old body, obviously the 24-year-old body is going to be, mass leaps and bounds, better, more fit than a 16-year-old body. So it might be that, yes, he is probably a bit too young to go through, Clipsal and two 250K races and just the severe heat that is, synonymous with Clipsal. And like, no matter how fit he can be, like he's just not ready for that level of physical and mental demand. So Yeah, just I still think he's too young, but at this stage, I think it might just be best for him to just keep plugging away, and then by season's end, at like say Newcastle, which will be very tough. I have seen that is 97 laps around a street circuit, which is enormous for any street race. I think by then he'll, be used to the car, be used to the heat, and be used to the physical demands. As the main thing for him is just keep at it for his racing etiquette. And also as well, a big thing that he needs to improve is his physical and mental state to really become one of the fit guys in the paddock. As he certainly has the ability to do that. As he is very much younger than quite. Than a lot of the guys in the field.
Also, another team, last team we'll probably talk about, Wilson Security Racing GRM, the Volvo-less Volvo team. Effectively, it was a bit of a tough weekend for them coming in and getting that new Holden chassis up to spec. However, it wasn't too bad. They were in the midfield, you'd have to say. James Moffat managed to get 10th place for them on a day on the fir in the first race. Garth Tander in 12th, and in the second race, it was Tander. It was just outside the top 10 in 11th, and Moffat a bit further down, 16th. So a good start from Gary Rodgers Motorsport. What's probably going to be a difficult year, a very much a stopgap year as they look around to see if there's any more manufacturers looking likely to join the sport. But it seems if they are managing able to polish off that Holden chassis, they could be up there in the top 10, which is good to see.
Again, like it, a bit like Mobil 1 HSP Racing, like they just needed to get through the weekend without ma any major dramas, and they've done it, and they have done that pretty well. And I think just being outside the top 10 at Clipsal is a fantastic result when you consider how little preparation time they've had with the VF Commodore, building basically four chassis in a very short space of time. And that they can really leave with their heads held high. And now they just need to keep building on the good momentum that they've gained from Clipsal and just continue that impressive form and see if they can become regular back end top 10 finishers.
Moving on now to the world of Formula One. Testing continued at Barcelona, the second test, currently topping it at the moment after 2 days. Valtteri Bottas with a 1 minute 19.3110, which is almost half a second up, which is pretty much 3 seconds up on the last year's pole time, half a second up on the lap record on that circuit in terms of qualifying, which is Mark Webber's lap from 2010. So the solid start from Mercedes is looking still very good. Williams were able to get some decent running in though, after their first test was curtailed a bit by Lance Stroll as an off-track incident. Felipe Massa coming back and going second in the times, which is not actually that bad for him as well. However, the big concern in case of a lot of teams, well, of most of the teams, is Honda. There's been a lot of talk about the Honda outfit, sorry, McLaren Honda outfit at the moment. In particular, there was a bit of talk earlier from, I think, their boss, Zach Jones, who said that any news of Honda issues and stuff is fake news. It was all completely fine. At which point, Fernando Alonso comes and turns around after the second day and says the complete opposite. He says, according to motorsport.com, that they didn't think they were too far in the back in terms of the chassis, but we only have one problem, and that is the power unit. There's no reliability, there is no power. We're 30 kilometers down on the straight, every straight, and when you're 30 kilometers down on every straight, it's difficult because it's, of course, puts them back. Certainly, you've got way back compared to the rest of the other teams. So it is going to be another difficult year for McLaren Honda. It seems Josh, and it looks like Fernando Alonso might be slowly coming to the end of his tether.
Yeah, like McLaren is a complete shambles right now. Like, they've got opinions and people going all over the place, and their relationship with Honda is definitely starting to go sour, which is the last thing they need. The Honda power unit itself, like, just needs to be so much better than this. Like, they've been in, this is their third year as an engine supplier, and also as well, they've had about 38 to 40 Grand Prix to try and get the Honda power unit right for on race days this year, And, you know, they've gone backwards. It's like we're back in 2015 again. Like, you know, I honestly believe there's a great chance that McLaren will finish ninth in the constructors this year, just out of Sauber, which is a very big thing to say considering the progress that they made last year. But this year they're just, it's just, you know, been absolutely terrible for McLaren. Also Fernando Alonso. Like, I mean, if this, you know, huge shambles continues, which it, you know, probably will, then I think he might be, you know, then there's a fantastic chance for Alonso to retire at the end of this year. Like, I certainly wouldn't put my money against it, as like, you know, he's just genuinely not liking life in Formula One right now. And Stoffel Vandoorne, like, we haven't really heard that much from him from this year so far. Like, you know, he's just, you know, got his head down, and I think, you know, he's just prepared for a long, difficult year, which could go, which very well could be, you know, few, very few and far between in terms of how points are going to go. So, yeah, just this could be Alonso's last year, and you know, the future for the McLaren Honda partnership is certainly uncertain.
Yeah, not the good news on that part. Having a look at the results from testing on the Formula One app has just gone and crashed. That's wonderful technology. Liberty Media for you at it again. But no, yeah. So far, Mercedes have been where we expect them to be. That's not entirely surprising. The app has now done something funny again. Well done. I'll try and get those testing times up soon. Yeah, but Mercedes are nowhere. Oh, sorry, they're where we expected them to be. Same with Ferrari mostly. They're sort of not at the top, but sort of up there. I think the real dark horse could be Renault, because at the moment they've been fairly solid, fairly reliable, not necessarily especially quick, but because they aren't running their engine at full power, they could really be the dark horse coming into Australia this year.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know, I think, you know, in most cases, if, like, when you speak to someone who follows F1 really closely and all the technical regulations, and you said to them, you know, who's going to make the biggest jump in 2017? Like, there's a really good chance that they would say Renault, and for very good reason. Like, the amount of resources and the eagerness that they have for, you know, this is their first new car since about 2010 that they've had control over. So they're obviously really excited, really eager for the start of the season. And like, there's a lot of excitement around Renault at the moment. Like, they're genuinely excited for what this year is going to bring, as they've made, you know, a fantastic step in terms of their development of their cars. They've got Nico Hülkenberg leading the charge, who will finish in the points this year quite a few times, I imagine. And Hülkenberg as well, he'd be absolutely, you know, counting down the seconds to Melbourne, as, you know, he's, you know, I think he's really, really happy with himself and his managing team. For leaving Force India and going to Renault, as you know, it could be like, it's not the same as when Lewis went from McLaren to Mercedes, but, you know, it's still a fantastic move on their part. Jolyon Palmer, you know, like, if Renault really do give him a good car, this is his last chance to really solidify himself on the F1 grid. If he doesn't perform this year, then, you know, there's no messing about. He's out, looking for something else to do with his life. You know, the only way up, really, the only way for Renault right now is up. And like, it's a question of how much, but, you know, they could, you know, especially by season's end, by the second half of the season, Renault really could be regular Q3 making Q3 appearances.
It certainly is a good choice from Nico Hülkenberg, especially to go there, because it's the amount of money that's being thrown at this year's cars. I don't think Force India will be able to compete, so they could possibly slide down. Renault could slide up, but anything could still happen in Formula One. And of course, there's only so much you can read in from testing. Now, let's move over to the States, where this weekend the Verizon IndyCar Series will be kicking off at St. Petersburg. It will be effectively the last year of the current IndyCar era. We've been running the special era kits between each manufacturer for about, well, this will be the third season now. They're going to be phased out again next year, where they'll have a joint era kit worked on by both manufacturers in order to keep the racing nice and close. But to be honest, at the moment, I think IndyCar, the momentum behind it is pretty big. We've got a very solid lineup compared to what's happening in their sister series, NASCAR. It's probably one of the most solid series looking forward coming into this year.
Yeah, and like with the forever changing nature of NASCAR and the stage system that they've got running at the moment, IndyCar is set for another big year of gaining supporters and taking another bite out of NASCAR's casual fan base. The ones that only really tune in for the big races, Daytona 500, Indy 400 at the Brickyard. Now, as IndyCar right now, as Naveen said, it's in a really good spot right now. There's unfortunately only one rookie in the driver of Ed Jones, but, he's a guy who did fantastically well, in the Indy Lights, last year. And the rest of the field, it's certainly pretty high caliber. And they're slowly, the American side of things is slowly gaining a very firm base. But then again, the international caliber is just as impressive at the same time. So yeah, IndyCar is set for another fantastic year, 17 rounds. Right, 16 in America and one in Canada. They're visiting a lot of fantastic race circuits. And IndyCar right now, it's a little bit of a stagnating year. Next year in 2018, they're going to have the neutralized aero kits. And in 2020, is set to be the last year of the DW12 with a brand new chassis. Expected to come in 2021. So it's certainly very exciting times for IndyCar right now. There's a lot of fantastic movements going around, and it should be a fantastic season.
And if you have a look as well, talking about the American side, we've now got to the point where I think almost half the grid, or a little bit more than half the grid, are now American drivers. And that's a good thing to see. I mean, we love the internationals and all, but you do need to have the base you can empathize with. And in particular, we'll be talking about probably the biggest move coming from the off-season, Joseph Newgarden joining Team Penske, Team Penske for a second out of habit. But Team Penske, the top team at the top of the tier, and Simon Pagenaud will have the number one on his car for this season. Joseph Newgarden takes the number two, Helio Castroneves the number three, Will Power the number 12, and when Pablo Montoya will be back for the Indy 500. Certainly the strongest team out there. And the biggest thing, I think, is this infusion of youth. I mean, pretty much everybody in the team over the last 2 years has been over 30. I mean, even Simon Pagenaud, I think, has been in the series in the American Open Wheel Circuit for some time. Yeah, he's 32. So having Joseph Newgarden in there as a young driver is probably the biggest shot in the arm. And if anything, I guess he'll push everybody else in Penske to lift. So it could be a really big season for them.
Yeah, really big season. Penske, but an even bigger one for Newgarden. Let's not forget, at preseason testing at Phoenix, he did top the timesheets, which is, very encouraging signs. And, this can only be good for Penske, it was a fantastic dilemma that they were in, where they had to essentially shove out Juan Pablo Montoya, who's had enormous success in IndyCar and Formula One for a brand new, very, very sought after young American in the form of Joseph Newgarden. And the sky's the limit for him, basically. Yeah, he's got into a stage where he can achieve anything he wants with amazing consistency. So Newgun, yeah, this is a really big year for him, and like I wouldn't be that surprised if we head into the final five events of the season with him being right in the championship chase. So yeah, just very big things for Newgun this for this season, and you know it will start the. A new age of the next generation of Penske IndyCar drivers coming through as Pagano, Castroneves, and Power. They've been around for quite a while now, and I just feel that they're slowly starting to come to the end of their careers, which is a shame considering we could be left without an Australian in the IndyCar series. But Will Power has had a fantastic career in IndyCar with that IndyCar title he won a couple of years ago, and yeah, it's going to be really difficult for teams like Chip Ganassi, Schmidt Pearson, and Ready Autosport to catch up.
Yeah, and talking about Joseph Newgarden, finally, if he wins the championship, that will be the biggest thing that IndyCar could possibly want, because you finally got American back on top.
And the un-American as well, who could potentially go on to win another four championships after that.
Yeah, it's certainly set to be a very exciting in terms of that for Team Penske. Their nearest rivals will probably be Chip Ganassi Racing, who've been up there or thereabouts over the last few years. However, this year they made the big gamble switching to Honda. I mean, Honda, during the first year of the Ericus, they were really struggling. But however, they've been freezing it and trying to get them back into the race. And I think this year is probably the closest that Chevrolet and Honda will be. I mean, Honda, they were good last year. They were able to get wins at the big Super Speedway races. However, if they need to bring their A game onto the ovals. And they've got a solid but not spectacular lineup. Scott Dixon and Tony Kanaan are there as well, the experienced drivers. Charlie Kimball as well. Max Chilton will be interesting to see how he goes coming over there with the Honda. But the other thing, of course, with Chip Ganassi is that they lose their big Target sponsorship this year. 27 years in sponsorship with that outfit. Probably the longest association, aside from perhaps Ferrari and Marlboro, would be the other ones. So because of that, it's going to be a big season of change for Chip Ganassi, and it's going to be interesting to see how they go. Of course, yeah, Chip Ganassi and Honda have been good in the past, but will they be able to back that up this year?
Yeah, certainly a lot of questions around that. And Chip Ganassi this year is a big unknown for them. They've got a very uncertain future with their lineup. Obviously, Scott Dixon and Tony Kanaan, two fantastic open wheel racers. Tony Kanaan, he's been, you know, really dominant in the past, especially at the oval circuits. And Scott Dixon has been just world class throughout his career. However, both those drivers who do spearhead Chip Ganassi once again this year, you know, they are like a power. Castroneves and Pagano, they are still coming towards the end of their career. And joining them is Max Chilton, who did make a couple of interesting headlines last year, and Charlie Kimball as well, a young but probably fragile American in there as well in the 83. An uncertain year for Chip Ganassi, but in all honesty, I think they'll be really looking forward to next year with the freeze and the same aero packages for 2018. However, that doesn't mean that they'll still be pushing hard this year.
And especially the 500, which is somewhere where the Hondas have been strong the last few years, that's going to be a big aim for them. Now, because Chip Ganassi moves to Honda, that puts effectively the original primary Honda team, Andretti Autosport, a bit further down the chain. They've got a slightly rejigged lineup this year. Takuma Sato following as Honda backing is slotted in at that side, pushing out Carlos Munoz. Marco Andretti still sticks around. So does Ryan Hunter-Reay and Alexander Rossi in the Andretti Herta Autosport entry. They're going to be finding it tough, I think, to coming up against Chip Ganassi Racing. And they could possibly slip into the second in that Honda pack tier, which is going to be a bit tough on them because they've been flying the flag solo for so long. However, they do have good talent and a very good set of American talents in Ryan Hunter-Reay and Alexander Rossi. And I think if they can get a good package for them together, specifically on the speedways, they'll still be a shot in for the 500.
Yeah, for sure. And it's always going to be a tough year for Andretti. Like, they're just not in the right place right now. Like, they just need to go through like a whole brand new like philosophical change about, you know, what they're doing wrong, like, and what they need to do to catch Chip Ganassi and Penske and bring them back to the front of the IndyCar field. Like Ryan Hunter-Reay, like, it has been quite a while since he won his last IndyCar championship and only IndyCar championship so far, which coincidentally was the last time an American won, I think, in about 2000, and that was about 2013. I might be wrong there. And also Alexander Rossi, you know, really starting his full-time commitment to IndyCar by effectively killing the F1 dream at the back end of last year. So that's a big year for Rossi as well. Coming as the defending Indy 500 champion, it will be interesting to see how he performs at the road courses and at some of the ovals. I think a year of realization for Andretti.
Now, that's pretty much most of the big teams. We'll go through the others in a moment. But there are two big wild cards who always come up around this during the IndyCar series. They always surprise us with how well they go. And that is James Hinchcliffe and Graham Rahal. Rahal almost had a championship a couple of years ago. Ran very close with Juan Pablo Montoya and Scott Dixon, but ultimately missed out in what was a very wild 2015 season. Whilst James Hinchcliffe has been in and around the sport, up there so consistently over the last few years, although he hasn't really had all the effort to have a tilt at the moment. They're both Honda powered, so they might struggle a little bit on the road courses, but they'll be very strong on the ovals. Josh, I think they'll be up there again this year, but I still think they don't just necessarily have enough to put in a successful challenge for a championship, considering how strong the rest of the competition is.
Yeah, for sure, and I completely agree with that. However, in terms of James Hinchcliffe's case, he's got Mikhail Aloshin right behind him, really hitting his strides, and Mikhail Aloshin will definitely push James Hinchcliffe much more this year. Mikhail Aloshin last year almost had that breakthrough win at, I think it was Mid-Ohio last year, which would have been absolutely amazing for him considering how fresh and green he is in IndyCar right now. But yeah, just that's the thing Graham Rahal doesn't have. Like, yes, he's got Aurel Servia for a few rounds, but for the most part of it, he hasn't got a teammate really pushing him, which could potentially affect his performances compared to James Hinchcliffe. But yeah, just those three, Rahal, Hinchcliffe and Aloshin, certainly will be surprise features in the Firestone Fast 6 towards the end of some road course and some ovals. They're three dark horses to keep your eye on throughout this year.
So having a look around the other cars on the grid, AJ Foyt switches from Honda to Chevrolet as part of that sort of switching that was going on at the end of last season. Connor Daly joins them alongside Carlos Munoz, and I think that he'll be one to watch. Munoz almost getting the 500 last year, and I'm interested to see. Hopefully, Foyt will be able to get the equipment ready. That's a big concern for Foyt. Also, having a look down the grid, we have Dale Coyne Racing. Sebastian Bourdais hops along after the unfortunate demise of KVSH Racing earlier this year. He will be there alongside Ed Jones, who I think might be IndyCar's first entrant from the United Arab Emirates.
Yes, it's not official. Like, I mean, it's one of those weird cases where it's like full of passport and customs, where he's basically British, but he was born in Dubai, or lives in Dubai, but it's one of those weird, you know, he's from the United Arab Emirates, but he's British, but he's United Arab Emirates or whatever the abbreviating is for them. But he flies the Arab Emirates flag, even though he's British. So, yeah, just one of those quirky situations. But he is the only rookie, which means full-time rookie this year and only confirmed rookie so far for the 2017 season, which means he will be uncontested for the Rookie of the Year, which is, you know, it's certainly a blessing in disguise, but, you know, realistically, you want one other guy or girl there, you know, just to see if you are the next best thing. So, yeah, that's an interesting light for Dell Coyne. Bourdais, you know, basically fantastic in whatever he drives, even though he's a bit of a crash hazard. But, yeah, Dell Coyne racing, a solid lineup, I must say.
Yeah, also having a look, the other couple of cars, Ed Carpenter Racing, of course, Ed Carpenter losing, Joseph Newgarden to Penske. Spencer Pickett will come in and replace him for some rounds. Ed Carpenter will, of course, drive at the other rounds. J.R. Hildebrand, though, gets a full-time seat. The man who almost won the Indy 500 a couple of years ago. And finally, Dreyer & Renbold Racing, the Chevrolet 24 entry, has Sage Karam in there for the Indy 500. We don't have a good idea of exactly who's going to be contesting as the Indy 500 in wildcard form yet. However, we will figure that out later on. Having a look at the schedule, though, probably one of the strongest schedules we've seen on the calendar in a while. We've got everything confirmed already. Nice to go. We haven't got any late withdrawals as far as we know. And I think the one thing I really do like about IndyCar is that they've been really hitting the mix over the last few seasons with a unique calendar, which has got something different. Even in the ovals, each oval is different. It's got different characteristics. And nowhere can you see that more than with the addition of Gateway Motorsports Park, which is probably one of the most unique ovals on the IndyCar calendar.
Yeah, certainly unique, and I'd almost call it awkward, as you know, I still remember it from the good old Tokyo Race Driver 3 or Viet Supercars 3 days. You know, just trying to get those two very different corners right was always a challenge in itself. A very fantastic mix of some of North America's best circuits. I think there's five street courses and six ovals, and the rest are all permanent racetracks. So it starts off this weekend at the streets of St. Petersburg in Florida. Then there's the classic Long Beach race next month, followed by Barber Motorsports Park, always a fun little circuit. Then we've got the first of the ovals, Phoenix International Raceway, which is going through some major upgrades and changes throughout this year and into next year, so that'll be something to keep your eye on. Then we've got the month of May, the month of Indianapolis, with the first IndyCar Grand Prix at the road course, and then May 28th, that famous and fabled and holy weekend at Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the Indy 500, the 101st running. And then following that, very swiftly, is the raceway at Belle Isle, the doubleheader. Then we've got Texas Motor Speedway, which hopefully won't be rained out and delayed for 2 months this year. Then we've got Road America.
I do like the sponsor for Texas Motor Speedway is a water sealer. Yeah. So hopefully that's a good sign from them.
Yeah, for sure. Then we've got Road America, always a fantastic place to go. Iowa Speedway, the scene of Joseph Newgarden's absolute dominance last year. Then we've got the only non-US race at Toronto for number 12 at Exhibition Place. Then we go back to Mid-Ohio, which is a fantastic little circuit. Then we've got the Tricky Triangle at Pocono. Then the return to Gateway the weekend after. Then for the second last race, it is Watkins Glen, which was a fantastic reintroduction last year. And then we wrap it up once again at Sonoma. So a very fantastic calendar indeed. And should be a fantastic season for IndyCar.
Yeah, certainly plenty to look forward to. It all kicks off early on Monday morning here in Australia. You can watch it on ESPN. I think it moves over there. Let's move over now to NASCAR. Of course, the biggest motorsport in America keeps on going. The carnival keeps on unfolding. Brad Keselowski took the race win in Atlanta after some late race drama. Kevin Harvick was Tate took the first two stages. He led 292 laps of the race. However, he got a late race speeding penalty, which put Keselowski in the slot, just edging out Kyle Larson with seven laps to go.
Yeah, so I think that's the second or third year in a row that Kevin Harvick has led an enormous amount of laps, had enormous car speed, had a great setup, and once again just doesn't come up with the goods. And a big talking point was the chase format. Like, you know, just I still go back to what I said in the last podcast about what NASCAR should do. I just don't like it. Like, it's just like there's just not a guarantee of exciting racing and exciting strategies, especially at places like Atlanta and Las Vegas, which they go to next week. Well, this week, I should say, where, you know, they're just enormous green flag runs, and NASCAR they just can't ignore this big issue as it is. It's just not working. Fortunately, much unliked new damage timer rule that hampered a lot of runners at the Daytona 500. Thankfully, that didn't have as big of an impact at Atlanta last weekend, mainly because there wasn't a big one or a lot of argy-bargy. Another very interesting two interesting topics that sort of, you know, link very heavily towards each other was a little bit of disgrunt about how little downforce NASCAR actually is running at the moment, as there were a lot of talk around the paddock at Atlanta last weekend with how little downforce they have, which, you know, doesn't enable them to go side by side through the big turns, which is it's a staple customary of NASCAR. So I think I was all for this move, but now that we think about it, I think for, you know, the big ovals, not necessarily the road courses, I'd imagine this new downforce package would be fantastic at the road courses, but for the ovals, I think they need to go back to last year, just to bring back that classic side-by-side racing, which makes NASCAR NASCAR. So, and also as well, there's a lot of demand for a repave at Atlanta, as, you know, as the track itself was looking pretty, you know, very, very polished, and just in a need of a shake-up for next year.
Having a look at these standings coming in, it's an interesting one because of this point system. Kevin Harvick leads the standings despite not actually winning a race, but because he took three stage wins over Daytona and the two at Atlanta, he comes out of the top. He only has three playoff points, though. And after that, it's Kurt Busch, who, of course, took the victory at Daytona, and then Brad Keselowski, Chase Elliott up there as well with Joey Logano. Other big news coming out of the weekend is that Las Vegas will host two NASCAR triple header weekends in 2018. That's the second race taking the place of the second New Hampshire Motor Speedway race during the playoff season. Las Vegas is a track that was pretty much purpose built for NASCAR in terms of how close to racing is and the banking stuff. It had disastrous results for IndyCar, but it had a great NASCAR record over the last few years. And Josh, you'd probably say it'll be pretty good inclusion into the playoffs.
Yeah, well, this is all part of NASCAR's, you know, expansion of their fan base in the Western states. As, in terms of New Hampshire, like, it's been a really solid chase host for the past few years. And, this could throw up a lot of interesting scenarios and features into the chase in 2018. I don't think I'm entirely sold. I don't think I've ever been entirely sold on Las Vegas. I've never really liked that speedway that much in terms of its head-to-head racing and how exciting it is. I like driving around it, but I don't personally the races around there that much. Like, it's another track that's notorious more its long green flag runs. But yeah, just NASCAR, is taking this move just as like, I mean, the Western fan base is largely untapped in terms of most motorsports, really, with the lack of really good circuits out there. As Laguna Seca is very much an oasis in a long and vast, lonely desert. So, like, I can see why they've done this, but at the same time, like, I'm just like, I'm just unsure about whether or not New Hampshire was the right circuit to be replaced by Las Vegas. But we'll have to wait and see for the 2018 season whether or not that adds any extra spice. Like, I mean, it will definitely add a lot of logistical challenges for the teams, as New Hampshire is a track that sits nice and pretty in the northwest or in the northeast of the country, which is a very highly dense populated part of the country in terms of NASCAR tracks are concerned. So we'll have to wait and see, but I'm unsold about whether or not this is the right move.
So that's pretty much all we have time for this week. Next week we'll be wrapping up everything that happened at the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. It's a kind of a quiet weekend of motorsport after this. There's not really much on, so we might have a look forward, have our first Formula One pre-season preview before it all kicks off in that final weekend of April. Also, MotoGP will be building up as well to that as well. We'll see you then. I've been Naveen Razik.
And I've been Josh Carroll.
And we'll see you next time. Goodbye.